Welcome to the Supreme Court of Virginia podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Ben Glass Law and Virginia appellate attorney Steve Emmert. Listening to oral arguments from the Supreme Court of Virginia is one of the best ways to stay abreast of both substantive and procedural law. And today's smart lawyers know that any case, even if it is outside their practice area, can offer a learning opportunity. So, listen, enjoy, subscribe, and leave us feedback.
You may proceed.
Good morning. My name is Sante Paracci. May it please the court. The issue in this case is whether the Commonwealth knowingly proved that my client, Talit King, knowingly and intentionally possessed a controlled substance. Our position is that the Commonwealth did not prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt, because no trier of fact could have found that under the circumstances that my client was aware of the presence and nature or character of the controlled substance and that it was subject to his dominion and control.
Was he aware of the character and the presence of the marijuana smoke coming out of the car?
Judge, our position in this case is that the Commonwealth put forward no evidence that my client knew of the marijuana smoke and knew that that particular odor was indicative of a controlled substance, Judge.
Is it not a reasonable inference if it was as pungent as the officer testified it was?
Judge, that may have been a reasonable inference, Judge. My issue is that other than his presence, there's no other evidence to suggest that he knew the marijuana was present. There was
Counsel, I'm just so curious by your answer in the year 2020. How would one, in a criminal case, prove that someone knows what marijuana smoke smells like?
Judge, there could be a few ways that that would be done. A lot of the ways that Commonwealth proves its case in other drug situations is where, and there are some excellent cases cited by the Commonwealth in this case, where there's some attempt to hide or attempt to push the police away from. The case of Bolden is a case where somebody exits the vehicle and approaches the police officer, potentially creating the inference that that person, Bolden, was trying to keep the police away from a specific area of the car, that area of the car.
So in other words, and I said the year 2020, I must say I'm going to go back to probably the 1970s and Cheech and Chong movies, where, you know, you might have a car or a room where the smoke is just coming out of it and just overwhelmingly so. And you're saying that unless there's some sort of an overt action, the court cannot take notice or cannot conclude that someone would know what marijuana smells like?
Judge, that's...
When they have been in the car, they are the only person who has been in the car and there's an overwhelming odor of marijuana in that car?
Judge, Mr. King's position is that based on all the circumstances and what the Commonwealth is able to prove, that they have no ability to prove that he knew the marijuana smoke was present. Judge, I would point out that it's slightly broader than that.
I think you've got some arguments that are interesting arguments. I'm just not sure that your first one is going to get very far with this justice. But go
sir,
ahead.
Judge, I think it's even more one step. Judge, this is in fact a case about heroin. My client was convicted of possession of heroin. It was contained, as the court will recall, in the center console. There was an arrest of Mr. King. He was taken into custody. And then at that point, the officer secured the keys to his vehicle, and at that point perceived the odor of marijuana, a strong odor of marijuana coming from the vehicle, Judge.
The trial judge thought that the marijuana had been recently smoked because it was a fresh, burnt smell, and it was pungent, and it was coming out of the vehicle in enough of a way for the officer to smell it without even getting in the vehicle. If it was recently used, and the trial judge said, well, to get to the heroin, you got to go through the bag of marijuana. He's the only guy in the car. There's no other possible hypothesis of innocence that anybody's bringing to the fact finder's attention. Why isn't it reasonable to say he obviously knew and possessed the presence of the heroin because he knew and possessed the presence of the marijuana?
Judge, there are the record contains evidence that the officer fell in behind the defendant who was driving the vehicle, and his observations were limited to a minute or so, four or five blocks, a relatively short period of time, Judge. One of the cases that's one of the other cases cited by the Commonwealth indicates where another witness testifies that the defendant was in possession of the vehicle for 2 hours.
Yeah, I think your point would be a good one if the trial judge hadn't explicitly made a factual finding that to get to the marijuana bag, he had to go through, to get to the heroin bag, he had to go through the marijuana bag, essentially, pull it off, go into the console, and he would have known the heroin was there and would have possessed it constructively, if not physically.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I don't understand your question. Would the court consider repeating it or asking it?
Of course. The presence of marijuana and the access to the bag of marijuana. Was there a bag of marijuana in the console?
The evidence suggests there was a bag of marijuana below or slightly underneath the bag of heroin. Yes, sir.
And to get to that bag of marijuana, you would have to pull off or push aside the bag of heroin, and the car is filled with marijuana smoke, which reasonably implies recent use, not use a day ago.
It could, Judge. One distinction between the bag of marijuana that was found and the marijuana smoke was that the bag of marijuana, to my understanding, and what the record contains, is unburnt marijuana. The marijuana smoke was apparently emanating from the vehicle.
So is your argument basically that while the trial court did make a factual finding that the unburned marijuana is in the console under the heroin, so if that was the marijuana that was smoked, they would have to go past the heroin? So your argument is that first you have to infer that the driver was in the car for a significant period of time, that the driver knew the smell of marijuana, which Justice Mims says that's crazy, everybody does, and that the marijuana that was actually smoked by whomever it was smoked actually came from the bag that was in the console that was in the car. So all of those inferences have to be arrived at in order to say that the bag that was under the heroin, he knew about it. Is that your argument?
Yes, ma'am. That is my argument, Judge, is that all of those things have to be true or at least put forward in the evidence in order for the Commonwealth to have met its burden of a trier fact to find that he was knowingly and intentionally in possession of the heroin that was apparently on top of the marijuana.
But why is it necessary to take that very last step in the sequence, that the marijuana he was smoking in the vehicle and filling the vehicle with recent smoke had to come from that bag? Why is it enough that he's smoking marijuana, a bag of marijuana is right there, and a bag of heroin is right next to it? You don't normally put burnt marijuana in a bag and store it there.
Correct. And Judge, that would be part of our argument, is that the facts and circumstances in this case don't give rise that Mr. King knew about the marijuana and then therefore then knew also about the heroin.
Roger that. I mean, but that's a tough sell on the marijuana point. You know that. So what's the best argument you have, I think, is in response to Justice Powell's question, is that he smoked their marijuana taken from the bag. And my question to you is, okay, that's probably a very reasonable inference, and that appears to be the inference the trial judge drew. Why is that necessary, though?
Judge, it may not be necessary. Our case, what this case is about, is whether the Commonwealth proved its case. There could be, and Judge, the evidence doesn't suggest he owned the car. He was obviously in recent occupancy and the sole occupant of it. He had the key to it, Judge. That doesn't preclude the idea, the reasonable inference that other people also had access to the vehicle.
Was there any argument that someone else owned it? Was there any hypothesis of innocence that he was borrowing it for the day from his buddy who's a marijuana user, or any hypothesis of innocence at all?
Judge, the Commonwealth has the burden of proving that he knowingly and intentionally did that. So our argument is that they didn't put forward any evidence he knew what the marijuana smelled like. There wasn't any statements that were introduced. One of the Irvin case, the Court of Appeals case that's cited by the Commonwealth, the opinion takes the defendant in that case testified. He said that he was maybe familiar and then maybe walked to that back, Judge. Mr. King exercised his right throughout and continues to remain silent, Judge.
Counsel, why wouldn't it be necessary to infer that the marijuana he smoked was the marijuana in the console? If he brings his own marijuana to the party and never has occasion to go into the console, then how would the Commonwealth prove that he knew that the heroin was in the console? Unless he has to go past the heroin to get to the marijuana. I'm confused
Judge,
by your answer.
Judge, as I think I understand your question, I'm going to try answer it as best I
that
can.
That was a pretty friendly question.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Judge. Would Your Honor consider rephrasing the question or asking a question?
Your answer should be your points well taken.
You have an excellent question. Justice Powell, you make excellent questions.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I want to point out a few other things about this case that are, I think, different than the Bolden case and the Irvin case that are cited. Again, we have a sole occupant, recent occupancy, the driver of the vehicle. The Commonwealth, I think, puts forward this idea that my client somehow avoided contact with the police, that he did something to deceive or to move the officers away from the car, that somehow his conduct was indicative of a guilty person, Judge, and that's one of the things that the court can use. My client exits the car, he's driving, he tells the officer, "Why are you messing with me?" And then he enters into the house, comes back out once he's been arrested, Judge. Perhaps the court can infer, but in my experience, practicing where I practice, the relationship or the contact between the officer and the defendant in this case is not a dissimilar. It's not sort of. It's a very commonplace interaction between the police and the people who live in Petersburg, Judge. And I think furthermore, the Fourth Amendment.
Was there any evidence of what home he was going into?
I'm sorry?
What home he was going into?
I don't believe the record contains any evidence, Judge.
What was the evidence of the other occupants of the home as to their knowledge of who he was?
The girl in the... A young girl, turned out to be 11, answered the door. She expressed some confusion about perhaps who this person was, wasn't oriented to who my client was, and so therefore the police found that as an opening to go and have a conversation with those folks.
Well, that implies pretty strongly that the child was afraid because she did not know who this gentleman was.
Judge, and that's...
And hold up a sec, because from what I read in the transcript, that's what he said. He went to the door, the little girl seemed to be confused. He says, "I'm your cousin." She lets him in.
She does let him in, Judge.
And he goes in the house, and she's not upset. She comes back to the door when the officer comes and says, and the officer says, "Who is it?" She says, "It's my cousin."
Furthermore, Your Honor, actually, the police, Officer Miller, to his credit, have actually satisfies himself that nothing untoward is going on here. I would direct Your Honors to the appendix, page 20 at the bottom. It says, "Once Mr. King identified himself, I said, okay. Everything appeared to be consistent at that point in time. I went back to my vehicle, at which point I did run checks on Mr. King. He came back wanted." So at least Officer Miller was satisfied that this wasn't an unusual conversation, that there was nothing about Mr. King's conduct that gave him any belief that this car somehow contained contraband. He wanted to assure that apparently Mr. King didn't have any active warrants, but he himself was not put out or discomfited by Mr. King's conduct, at least as it relates to the contents of the vehicle. So I would argue that there's no evidence whatsoever that Mr. King did anything to push the police away from that vehicle. There's no evidence that oh, I've got something going on in here.
Could there be an inference that, I mean, sure, they're cousins, but she obviously was, or it appears to me she was surprised to see him, that he sort of was opportunistically going there to her surprise in an effort to just get away from police scrutiny. Is that a possible inference?
Thank you for tuning in to the Supreme Court of Virginia podcast. My name is Ben Glass, and Steve Emmert and I provide these oral argument audios for free as a public service. If you're a fan of the podcast, I'd love to send you my book, Renegade Lawyer Marketing, absolutely free. Just visit www.benglassreferrals.com, and I'll be glad to ship it to you. This book has helped thousands of lawyers across the country improve their lives and their practices. Again, that's benglassreferrals.com. Thank you for listening, and enjoy these oral arguments from the Supreme Court of Virginia.
Perhaps, Judge. I couldn't say, and the record doesn't contain any evidence about Mr. King's reasons or motives for going to where he was. The evidence does contain he was apparently taken into custody for an outstanding warrant.
Right.
So perhaps he understood that there may have been some papers outstanding for him. Again, having nothing to do
with it. Right. I mean, I think that's a response as well. If you have outstanding warrants, you might want to get away from the police.
It could be.
Irrespective of.
And our jurisprudence on the Fourth Amendment gives a lot of credence to the idea that consensual encounters, that people are aware of their ability to discontinue conversations with the police, to walk away from them, to direct expletives to them, And I think we don't perhaps like it, or the police shouldn't like it when people say those things to them, but this is a, I would argue, perfectly legal and, in fact, usual way of dealing with the police, where you're a person who knows what his rights are, you know you don't have to have any contact with the police, and you're choosing to avoid them at any cost. You may be doing everything exactly right. You may not be concerned about your warrants. You may not be concerned about the marijuana or heroin that you have in your car. But our law...
Right, it's perfectly legal when a police officer arrives on the scene for you to sprint away, but it can lead a fact finder to have certain inferences too. I'm not saying that's what happened here.
It may, Judge. And in this case, Mr. King's conduct toward the police, I would say, is consistent. He avoids them at all costs. He directs an expletive toward them. He chooses to remain silent at all points, Judge. So there's nothing about his moving away from the police that's different than the other ways that he's moving with the police. So I have 24 seconds left, but nothing else to say. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Lauren Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth in this appeal. The trial court in this case did not err when it found that the evidence was sufficient to find that the defendant had knowledge, custody, and control over the heroin found in the vehicle. The Commonwealth would submit that that ruling was not plainly wrong or without evidence to support it, and ask that this court affirm the defendant's conviction for possession of heroin.
Why couldn't he have brought his own marijuana to smoke in the car as opposed to what was in the console, which would lead to the heroin?
Your Honor, I think that's a reasonable, or that could have been a hypothesis of innocence that was brought forward to the trial court, but it was not, and I think that it is a reasonable inference from the evidence and the record that was in front of the trial court to make the findings that it did. The trial court in this case found that the marijuana, again, as the court has already discussed, was deeper inside the center console than the heroin. The heroin was very plainly obvious when you opened up the center console. It was in a clear bag on top of the marijuana and some other cash inside the center console. The defendant was driving the vehicle. He was the only one in possession of the vehicle.
Was there any baggies, residue, marijuana recovered on his person incident to arrest?
Not that it's in the record, Your Honor.
I mean, was there any evidence concerning who owned the car or how much he drove it or who else drove it or anything like that?
That is not in the record.
Any evidence as to how long he had been in the car except the 1 to 2 minutes that the officer had followed him?
The only evidence in the record is what the officer testified that he observed.
And certainly while the court is not required to explain its reasoning, what the trial court said here was he was basically driving the car was in his possession, the powdery substance was found within the console of the car. The court will find the evidence is sufficient. So what the court articulated, and I understand it's not required to articulate its reasons, was recent possession.
Of the car.
Yes, Your Honor. I think it also articulated more than that, but it did articulate that he was in recent possession of the car. He was the only one seen driving it, and he was also in recent possession of a car that smelled strongly of recently burnt marijuana, so strongly that the officer smelled it when he was just standing outside of the vehicle. So I think it's reasonable inference that while that defendant was driving that car around, either he recently smoked marijuana in that car or he knew someone else had and was therefore aware of the character and presence of the drugs found inside the vehicle.
He's aware of the character and presence of the marijuana for which he hasn't been charged.
Certainly, Your Honor, but I think it's also a reasonable inference if you're aware of one illicit drug in the vehicle and they're so close together and also you basically have to go through the heroin to get to the marijuana in the vehicle.
But there's no link between, again, this point has been made repeatedly, there's no link between the smoked marijuana or the odor of marijuana and the marijuana that's under the heroin.
Certainly, Your Honor, because it was smoked marijuana, I think you would not be able to find smoked marijuana once it is smoked, but it was marijuana found in the vehicle, the presence of the very strong odor, is a reasonable inference that the defendant is aware that there is marijuana.
But the Commonwealth's theory is that the smell of marijuana, which obviously would not be the same as the fresh marijuana in the console, came from the marijuana in the console, which would then give him knowledge of the heroin that's on top. That seems to be quite a few inferences for the trial court to draw to get to that conclusion.
Let me ask you this. Did they find any rolling papers or anything in the car?
No, Your Honor, but again, if it was smoked, I don't think, not that I'm incredibly familiar with what would happen, but I think that it would, you wouldn't find
there was no
whatever
intent to smoke
he had smoked.
Marijuana that was left.
Sorry, Your Honor.
No indication that anybody was trying to smoke that or had any ability to do so.
No, Your Honor, but I don't think that necessarily is dispositive of whether or not he was aware of that there was marijuana and heroin in the vehicle, whether or not there's additional paraphernalia. I mean, certainly if there was additional paraphernalia, that would be evidence in the Commonwealth's favor, but just because there's not additional evidence in this case, the Commonwealth still submits that there is, on this record, with the totality of the circumstances, the Commonwealth did prove that the defendant was aware.
So it's just fortuitous that he used his very last rolling paper to roll the blunt that he smoked in the car from the marijuana that was in the console that was under the helm.
Perhaps, Your Honor.
Okay.
So the man's in a car alone. Someone's been recently smoking marijuana, and there's one guy there. And there's marijuana right there by his right hand in the console. He can get to it in about a second. And the hypothesis of innocence by the defense is that it could be someone else's. He could have been smoking marijuana and just fortuitously had a sack of marijuana by his right hand. But who's to say it's his? I understand what the trial judge did here is find that inference unreasonable because the hypothesis of innocence has to have some scintilla of evidence, anything to rest upon, not just a crazy speculation.
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree with you.
But an inference of guilt has to have something to rest upon, too, doesn't it?
Certainly, Your Honor, and I think in this case the Commonwealth would submit that the trial court's findings were not plainly wrong or without evidence to support them. There is evidence in this record that the defendant was the only person in possession of that car, and that smelled so strongly of marijuana. It's not a reasonable hypothesis of innocence that he had no idea that it smelled like marijuana. They had no idea that there were drugs in the car.
But think about this. I mean, if the scent of marijuana was that strong, do you think that was from somebody smoking one cigarette? I mean, recently? I mean, because in this particular instance, we know the police officer never saw this fellow smoke any marijuana, right? Nobody was in the car smoking the marijuana when he was in the house. Nobody was in the car, you know, and the police officer sat there for a while. He went to the door a couple times, and then he goes to the car and he smells that scent of marijuana. So it's not something that was transient. I mean, it seems like to me, as far as that scent goes.
Certainly, I think even if the court was having trouble with the inference that he was the one that smoked it, just that strong smell of recently smoked marijuana and the fact that the defendant is the only one in possession of those drugs, I don't think it's a reasonable hypothesis of innocence.
But if they're not assuming that he smoked it, if they're not assuming that he smoked it, then the assumption would be that he got into a car where somebody had smoked it. If the assumption is not that he smoked it, then how do we get to his knowledge of the marijuana in the console?
Maybe
I interrupted you before.
Hopefully I'm trying to answer your question, Your Honor. I think it's not a reasonable hypothesis of innocence that someone else just abandoned these drugs in that car and left them for anyone to find while the car reeked of marijuana. That is not a reasonable hypothesis of innocence that this heroin and marijuana was just abandoned by some other person and then the defendant got in the car that reeked of marijuana and would indicate to anyone that there was marijuana in that vehicle and drove
no,
off.
No, it would indicate that someone had smoked marijuana in the vehicle. The smell of marijuana would indicate someone had smoked marijuana in the vehicle. We don't know whether they had smoked at all, whether they left with it. All it indicates is someone smoked marijuana in the vehicle.
And I would submit to this court that based on the incredibly strong smell of marijuana, that it is a reasonable inference that marijuana is in the vehicle and that the driver of the vehicle knew that there was marijuana in the vehicle.
Now you're drawing the distinction that you ask us not to draw or that you ask us to draw between smoked marijuana and fresh marijuana. The odor in the car was smoked marijuana, obviously. That in the console was fresh marijuana. So again, what we're left with is someone had smoked a large quantity of marijuana in that car.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think the trial court and the Court of Appeals were correct when they found that the reasonable inference was that the defendant was the person who did that, and then therefore he knew about the illicit drugs found in the center console in close proximity to where he was
So if it was reasonable to assume somebody's eaten Girl Scout cookies and has crumbs all over him, that the bag of Girl Scout cookies in the console probably at a reasonable, beyond a reasonable doubt, is his, unless something suggests it's not.
Everyone knows there wouldn't be any Girl Scout cookies left.
Yes.
But an unopened box of Girl Scout cookies in the console.
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree with your hypothetical. I would also submit that the defendant did attempt to divert this police officer away from his vehicle. He obviously was being followed by a marked vehicle for a very short period of time. He pulls into a driveway, and the encounter's on page 18 of the record, and I think it is respectfully more akin to how Justice Kelsey articulated it, in that the officer sees him say to the little girl when she opens the door, "You don't know me, I'm your cousin," or "You don't know me, I'm your cousin," and at that point, he thought it was a little suspicious because she was barely...
The system, this picture is not, "Oh, you remember me, I'm your cousin."
Exactly.
You don't even know who I am.
Yes.
But I'm going to tell you something you 11-year-old don't even know. I'm your cousin, step aside.
Yes, I think it's a reasonable inference that he quickly pulled into this house and attempted to divert the police officer away from the car. Whether or not he knew there were warrants out for his arrest, he was trying to put a distance between himself and the officer.
Right, I think it's a more compelling inference when someone doesn't have outstanding warrants, because obviously if you do have outstanding warrants, you haven't turned yourself in, you're going to try to get away from the police. So one possibility is he knows there's drugs in the car, he wants to distract the police away from the car, and so he bolts into this house. Another possibility is, I'm being followed by a police officer and I have outstanding warrants, I need to get away from this police officer. So the inference is less compelling with respect to the drugs, given the backdrop of the arrest of the outstanding warrants.
I would slightly disagree, Your Honor, because I think if you have outstanding warrants out for your arrest, you're going to be arrested and your car's going to be impounded and searched, and you're going to find the drugs in there. So I think either way, the fact that he was definitely trying to put the reasonable inference was that he was trying to put a distance between himself and the vehicle and the officer is a factual inference you could take from this record.
Well, why wouldn't the Commonwealth try to come up with some evidence to support these reasonable inferences that are there? You know, he's going to his house, he doesn't know anybody yet, and there's a little kid. Why don't you just get the people that live in the house to come in and say, "I've never seen this guy before, I don't know him, he's not related to us." As opposed to, like, well, if he goes through a door and his cousin doesn't recognize him, you know, he must have been trying to get away from the police. It just seems to me baffling that you wouldn't get the evidence there to prove it one way or the other.
Certainly, Your Honor, I think there are always ways in which the Commonwealth could make the record stronger, and in this case, could the record be stronger? Yes, but the Commonwealth would submit still on these facts and the record in front of this court today that the trial court was not plainly wrong or without evidence to support it when it made the reasonable inferences based on the facts that the defendant was aware of the character and presence of both the marijuana and the heroin found in the center console in the vehicle he had been recently driving. Again, not to totally repeat myself, but the totality of the circumstances supports the trial court's inferences here. The trial court did not err in finding that the evidence was sufficient beyond a reasonable doubt to convict the defendant of possession of the heroin in that center console. And if this court has no further questions, the Commonwealth would ask that you affirm the conviction.
You have 21 seconds remaining if you care to use it.
Questions? Mr. King asked you to consider vacating his conviction and removing him from the conditions of his probation.
This session of the Supreme Court of Virginia is now adjourned.
All right.
Would you hire an appellate lawyer to handle your jury trial? Of course not. Trying cases requires a different focus, a different way of speaking, even a different way of thinking from handling appeals. So why would you ask a trial lawyer to handle your appeal? When it comes time to appear in an appellate court, trust a lawyer who specializes in appeals only. Steve Emmert limits his practice to appeals. Other lawyers consult him when they face tough problems in the appellate maze. Focus on what you do best. Call Steve Emmert at 757-965-5021 direct to find out how he can help you. Again, that's Steve Emmert at 757-965-5021.